It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for joining us this morning. Now, we focus on economic issues facing young LGBTQ plus people in the Milwaukee area, especially during the pandemic. According to research from the Williams Institute, the LGBTQ plus community faces higher rates of poverty compared to the broader population. Our next guest heads an organization that quickly pivoted to providing aid online to young LGBTQ plus people when in-person help became all but impossible. Now, are you gay, lesbian, trans, or a member of the LGBTQ plus community? What was your experience like over the last year and a half? Have you seen youth in that community affected by the pandemic? We want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Sydney Borden is the youth therapist for the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. The organization works with more than 100 individuals who are between 13 and 24 years old. Sydney, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So we're putting this through the lens of the pandemic. How has your community center been doing over the last year and a half?
It's definitely been a struggle, but I found that we pivoted quite quickly to be able to accommodate the needs of as many people as possible. And like many other people, you know, back March, April, May, trying to make a shift to online, it came with unique challenges. For us, it wasn't so much of trying to convince people to utilize an online platform more than it was trying to make sure that we were able to help people gain access to those sorts of technology so that they could actually like keep in contact with us. And while that came with its own kind of unique struggles in and of itself, I found that we were able to meet the needs of as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, without too much of an issue.
And have you been able to start folding in any in-person, assistance over the last year, or has it been mainly virtual?
So I would say majority virtual. We did have a period between June and November where we started seeing people in person again. And as things have sort of started lifting, we have the intention of beginning to offer in-person services. And we're in a little bit of a unique situation where we are physically moving locations. And with construction being a little bit delayed, we haven't been able to get into our new building yet. So the in-person services are to come. But for right now, we are strictly 100% virtual for all the services we're offering.
And can you just give us a little bit of an overview about where you're moving from and where you're moving to once you finally ramp up to in-person services?
So we used to be in one of the beautiful cream Blatz buildings kind of sort of next to MSOE's campus, and we only moved about 3/4 of a mile away. Now we're about 2 blocks north of Pfizer Forum off of 3rd and Court Street, just across the street from Golden Meyer School. Hopefully, as soon as we get this open, we're actually moving to an entire freestanding building versus we used to be on the second floor of a 3-story office building. So it'll be a lot easier to reach us. We now have a parking lot, which is going to make a lot of our frequent flyers very, very happy because now they have somewhere to park when they come to see us. And hopefully it'll be able to accommodate a lot more people so that we can continue expanding our services and be able to offer, even more.
And let's talk about some of the programs and services the LGBT Community Center offers. What specific programs are available for young members of the LGBTQ plus community?
So the majority of our youth services, since we are grant funded, our youth is sort of defined as being 11 to 24, which is, you're hard pressed to find a 20-year-old that thinks that they're a youth, but that's still how we classify it. But right now we offer our virtual drop-in, which is sort of a safe space for young folks. Right now it kind of functions more like a virtual hangout. A lot of times it'll be headed by one of our undergraduate interns and our youth program coordinator. And it's just a space for kids to be able to like, come on, they hang out, share maybe what's been going on in their lives. Sometimes they'll get together and play a game. They'll do kind of others like semi-structured activities. And it's kind of just a space for the youth to be able to make it their own. We also offer 2 support groups. One is just a very general LGBTQ and mental health support group. And another one is a trans, gender non-conforming and non-binary support group. The first happens Wednesdays from 4 to 5:30. The second Thursdays 4 to 5:30. And both of them are exclusively virtual right now, but we like to make sure that our groups function as a drop-in sort of format, meaning that there's no like very structured or regimented intake that somebody has to go through or some kind of very long registration process. It's just there for people to be able to come and go as they please, to be able to utilize that service in the most sort of like open and accessible way.
Did you end up having to, or did your community center end up having to cut any programs at all, you know, as the pandemic got underway? You know, what weren't you able to do outside of maybe in-person programs?
So we actually were in a very a wonderful position where we didn't have to cut anything. We actually, if you can believe it, added more services. So I guess instead of thinking like what program was cut, it was maybe just that there were certain programs we offered more than one time a week that we did have to start offering only once a week, like the drop-in center that I had mentioned earlier. When we're in person, that is a four-hour program that happens 3 days a week. Now that we're sort of in a virtual format, it's only happening on Mondays, and it's about a 2.5-hour program. We have an older adult program that was much the same. They're not that it had to get cut, just that it had to go from being 2 days a week to being one for about an hour less. So I think that we were pretty lucky in that right to be able to continue offering all of our services and then add additional groups to be able to continue reaching all of the folks that had been coming to see us in person at the center.
We are talking with Sydney Borden right now. She is the youth therapist for the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. And you can call in at 800-642-1234 with your own experiences or if you have any questions. Now, Sydney, you know, one of the things you mentioned a little bit earlier was, you know, access to, you know, these virtual programs. You're operating virtually. What other support outside of, you know, the programs that you offer, have you been offering to people who might have limited access to, say, broadband or internet service?
So that has been a unique challenge. We have come into contact with some instances with youth that might not have access to a laptop, might not have access to internet. And what ended up being very fortunate for us is being sort of locked within an area of the Milwaukee public school systems is that was a sort of, that was the service that they were able to provide to kids that might not have been able to get onto the internet. They were offering hotspots, or kids that didn't have laptops, they were able to come up with Chromebooks. And because we were able to sort of find access in that way to kind of help us meet that need, we found that just by sure virtue of luck, that a lot of the kids that we were noticing those issues with were students in the public school system who were able to gain access through that way. Operating as a nonprofit, being able to provide internet specifically was a unique challenge. We did the best that we could. We tried to accommodate meeting people, you know, sort of socially distanced in public if it was possible, whether that was in a park or some other kind of like big open space, you know, wearing masks, following all of our guidelines. But aside from that, I think that a lot of things just luckily lined up in place pretty perfectly for us, and that was able to help us continue to facilitate those sorts of services.
Now, Sydney, we've been talking about, you know, how your community center, you know, rose to the challenge of the pandemic, and, you know, getting these services to young people. But what kind of, you know, issues were, you know, I don't want to call them kids, but these young people, what did they bring to you during the pandemic? Did you notice any difference between, you know, what they were coming with, maybe advice wise or issues wise, before the pandemic and then during the pandemic?
I wouldn't say so much that the issue itself changed. Maybe just it kind of had a different face. You know, we work a lot with kids who are experiencing different kinds of mood and anxiety disorders. And when we would think about anxiety, you know, kind of pre-COVID, it was more situational. It was more, you know, worried about what came before, what's going to come after. But in the pandemic, it is sort of more of this existential worry. It's, you know, what's going to happen to everyone? When do we get to see people in person again? When is life going to return, you know, back to normal as we knew it? And it became really challenging to have that conversation a lot, because I would find that all of us have those same questions, whether we're young people or not. We all were sort of in this period where we're noticing we're in a very unprecedented time. We weren't really sure what was going to happen next. We didn't have a lot of those big ticket answers, so it was really just trying to tend to and to validate the anxiety in the moment, own that, while the kids and the young people were feeling that, it was something that we as staff at the center were feeling too, and I think that through being very honest and transparent about the situation that we were in and kind of fostering that sort of conversation in that way, I thought that we were able to have a lot more meaningful conversations where instead of trying to make somebody feel as though we're lessening their experience, we were more there to share that experience and sort of foster that growth together to sort of demonstrate that we're going through this same thing at the same time and we're going to be able to do it together.
Our guest right now is youth therapist Sydney Borden. She works one-on-one with LGBTQ plus youth through a local community center in the Milwaukee area. And you can call in with your experiences or questions at 800-642-1234. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation about how the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the social and economic well-being of the LGBTQ plus community, especially young people. And we want to hear from you. Are you a teenager that identifies within the LGBTQ plus community? What challenges have you faced over the last year? Maybe what wins have you had? Do you work with LGBTQ youth? What do they need right now to make it through the pandemic and thrive in the future? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We're talking with Sydney Borden of the LGBTQ community. The LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. And Sydney, before the break, we were talking about, the anxieties that some of these kids were bringing to you during, the pandemic. And one thing that stood out to me, is kind of the act of coming out, and that some kids, some young people might not be out yet. Is that something that you and your organization, had to kind of maneuver around to help people, during the pandemic when they might not have as much privacy as they would coming into the community center?
Absolutely. That was, I would say, probably the biggest challenge that we faced earliest on is recognizing that, we're living in Milwaukee. It's a pretty old city. Some of these houses don't quite have the thickest walls. And we were noticing that there were a lot of young people that were sort of disengaging from our services because they didn't feel as though they had a confidential space to be able to facilitate those conversations. And for some of them that may have had the space, they didn't really feel that they had the degree of comfort to even be saying those words aloud when they were in their home for fear of who was going to be listening, who might overhear them, and sort of inadvertently outing themselves in a space that they might not feel safe or comfortable or maybe even just ready. Each situation was uniquely different. And I would say for sure that that was something that was missed immediately, was being able to have that 100% confidential space in the center and knowing that that was something that was a very big privilege of having been in person for so long.
I want to switch gears just a tiny bit, because, your community center serves Milwaukee. How are young people of color and members of the LGBT community, being disproportionately, affected by the pandemic right now? Did you see any shifts at all?
I definitely wouldn't say that we saw many shifts as far as the demographics of the folks that we were serving. I would definitely say that the majority of the young people that I do see are folks who are people of color, and I didn't see any drastic shift as far as, discontinuing seeing those young people. I found that there was a really big shift that needed to happen, and it was something that we were able to tend to, but it was very wonderful to be able to continue servicing those folks and knowing that there is such a dearth of services that are focusing specifically on meeting the needs of that community. And I know that we did the very best that we could to be able to rise to that challenge to make sure that that wasn't a demographic that fell by the wayside.
Now, one of the things that we did want to talk to you about, and we've kind of gotten to it here and there throughout the conversation, has been the economic impact that the COVID-19 pandemic had on the LGBT plus community. You know, there was a study done by the Williams Institute, that's at UCLA, that, you know, estimated about 1 in 4 LGBTQ plus people across the United States face things like food insecurity. How many of your members are dealing with food insecurity currently?
I would definitely say that we have a decent number of folks that are experiencing issues in and around that. But what we were able to do to be able to sort of rise and meet that need was we actually operate as a food pantry. And when the pandemic happened, instead of allowing folks to be able to come into the center to be able to, you know, self-select the items that they would like, we began pre-packaging bags to kind of meet the needs of folks. And we noticed more that it was folks with specific dietary needs that were sort of at the biggest disadvantage, whether that was folks that are vegetarian, vegan, might have some kind of gluten intolerance, maybe dairy intolerance, and trying to make sure that we had the sorts of food items that were able to accommodate that kind of diet to make sure that folks are able to supplement with the foods that they actually can take in. And as we sort of made this shift into our new building, we've recognized that we're not able to kind of put these bags together for lack of a physical space to put them together or to set them out at. We've been able to provide gift cards to Metro Market or to Pick and Save to be able to give out to our community members to make sure that even if we can't provide the food itself, that we can provide access to be able to go and have the autonomy and agency to select the foods that you would like and that are going to meet your needs.
That sounds like, you know, a great way to be flexible, kind of in light of, you know, food insecurity and, you know, just the pandemic at large. You know, right now, our guest is Sydney Borden of the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Now, another issue facing LGBTQ youth, particularly transgender individuals, is the name change process. And this is something that your community center offers a program, a name change clinic. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the name change workshop was created and is implemented by my coworker, Alex Corona. And when we were operating pre-COVID, we were able to accommodate anywhere from 10 to 15 people coming into the center to physically sit down, be walked through the paperwork, sort of be shown, you know, this is kind of how this gets filled out. This is how this functions. We help people make copies because whenever you file something with the courthouse, it needs to be done to the letter. And what we would do is we were able to get like a fleet of Ubers, bring everyone over to the courthouse, and then sort of walk them through like, this is where you file this. This is where you go to meet, you know, the clerk, the judge. And it was a very nice, very hands-on sort of program. And as we've kind of shifted into COVID world, we've noticed we have to make an adjustment. So when we were in person, we were still able to bring people into the center, but then Alex Corona was actually filing all of the paperwork for folks. So that way it wasn't a burden to have to teach people how to navigate the court website, which, you know, came with a lot of unique challenges that were something that Alex had to tend to quickly and to make that shift. And it really happened very seamlessly. There wasn't much of an issue. Now the court dates were taking a little bit longer just because of, you know, operating this sort of capacity with things being on Zoom and things, you know, taking a little bit longer to file because now everyone's not in the courthouse building itself. So having to send all these things off in different forms of capacities. And even through that, we've still been able to service, I'd say like at least 50 to 60 folks just during the pandemic and facilitating the name change process, whether in a group or an individual setting.
Now, outside of your community center, what do youth individuals need as far as mental health services and access to necessary resources?
So we were definitely noticing that there were folks that might not have been engaging in individual therapy as frequently. So maybe folks that we were seeing twice a month or once a month that started shifting back to operating in weekly therapy to kind of be able to pad the gap of navigating what it was like to make this kind of adjustment to live in COVID world. And I would definitely say that the coordination of resources, it became very challenging. You know, we have other organizations that we tend to make a lot of cross references with that we were all sort of operating in different capacities, a lot of them being virtual, trying to figure out whose services, you know, are continuing, whose services made a shift. Is there anywhere that is still offering any kind of in-person programming? And sort of trying to make sure that as other youth-serving nonprofits, we were still coordinating what it was that we were doing so that we were still able to connect and still make sure that we were able to get the young people the services that they needed.
And Sydney, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sydney Borden is the youth therapist for the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. The organization helps more than 100 individuals who are between the ages of 13 and 24 years old. And you can find out more about the organization online at WPR.org/mornings. The news is next right here on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. This is The Morning Show. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson in for Kate Archer Kent. Coming up, we'll talk about how to have fun and stay safe on the water this summer. We'll take your calls at 800-642-1234. Now, with vaccines now widely available, a lot of Wisconsinites have been able to make summer plans more like the ones they did before the pandemic, seeing family, joining sports leagues, and holding birthday parties. But for families with members who can't get the vaccine, it can be tricky to understand what's safe and to navigate spaces where so many people have let their guards down. Madeline Fox has more on families with a mixed vaccination status.
A drawer in the laundry room of the Albert Home in Mequon is stuffed with masks in different sizes, colors, and patterns.
So we kind of mix, like, as long as they're clean, like, I don't mind whatever kid wants to wear, whatever.
The family of six still get a lot of use out of it, with three of their four kids too young to get vaccinated. They've been able to do more than they could last summer. Their daughter Kieran is playing softball again, just with masks. They get to see family that lives nearby.
My mom just had a birthday a couple days ago, and so when we got together, the adults usually don't mask now, but the kids that are unvaccinated still do, like when we're inside to have dessert, that kind of thing.
On a Friday morning, they headed for their local library in Mequon. The three youngest kept their masks on, and they headed to the self-checkout with a whopping 33 books. The Alberts have been able to keep relatively busy with the library, the playground next door, and sports teams, but have kept their pre-vaccination precautions in place, especially for kids Kieran, Liam, and Bryn. Generally, the guidance from state and federal health agencies is the same for unvaccinated kids as it was for everyone a few months ago, says Medical College of Wisconsin epidemiologist Laura Cassidy.
We do know that wearing a mask protects them. We know distancing, we know hygiene, we know all this, and, you know, the poor kids are going to have to do that a little longer than some of us, but we should all, you know, support the children in that.
Still, with disease levels down substantially, some summer school programs and camps are dropping mask requirements and distancing guidelines, even for kids who can't get the shots. That's left it up to individual families to weigh the risks of certain activities and inquire whether any COVID precautions are still in place.
You have to balance the risk with the benefit of the social interactions and of the sports and of the being outside. And, you know, what is the child's individual health status?
Cassidy says with family members who aren't vaccinated or for whom the vaccine might not offer as much protection because of underlying conditions, it's probably still safer to drive to a vacation spot than fly, for example. That's how the Alberts are navigating vacation. Local parties with family are okay, but seeing family in other parts of the world will have to wait, says mom Kathleen and Landon, who's 13.
That is one thing we haven't been able to do.
Like
so.
England or India to see my cousins and grandparents.
So my husband's parents still live in India and some extended family, and we've been trying to go every couple years, and it's been 2 years this summer.
How families are feeling now about the risks from COVID varies depending on how they've experienced the pandemic so far. Some had less access to health care, underlying conditions, and fewer resources. COVID fell heaviest on low-income families and families of color, who disproportionately lost loved ones, but also jobs and homes.
When we use the word normal, it is invalidating because it means that we can return to what was.
That's Sinesha Dale, a professor of psychology at the University of Miami. She studied and worked with families affected by the trauma of another deadly disease, HIV.
For people who have experienced a lot of trauma and a lot of losses, there is no return to what was. It's trying to forge ahead.
As COVID restrictions lift, she says ideally vaccinated people would also try to make things easier for people not yet protected by vaccination.
We have to ask ourselves, like, what is it that I want to get out of this activity? And then think about, well, are there adjustments that could be made where I would still get the feeling and fulfillment that I would want from it, but I would minimize the potential risk to myself or other people that I love?
Kids under 12 are expected to get approval for the vaccine sometime next fall. At least until then, many families will continue weighing risks while they watch much of the country happily set aside the precautions of the last year and a half. Madeline Fox, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, Wisconsin is home to more than 15,000 lakes and is bordered by two of the Great Lakes, Superior and Michigan. Being on the water is a hallmark of summer and part of the state's DNA. It's a lot of fun, but there are some dangers to keep in mind before getting on a boat or swimming. The Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project says last year there were at least 56 drownings on Lake Michigan alone, and there have been at least 19 so far this year. Our next guests join us to talk about how we can have fun and stay safe when we're out on the water. Now, how often do you go to the beach during the summer? What are some of your favorite activities? And what safety precautions do you take when you're out on the water, whether you're boating or swimming? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Jason Roberts is the recreation warden with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He serves the southeastern part of the state. Welcome, Jason.
Casey, well, thanks for having me.
And Teresa Coronado is a program manager at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. She also leads the Beach Ambassador Program. Thanks for being here, Teresa.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Teresa, let's start with the fun stuff first. What are some of your favorite water activities?
Well, sailing. I've been sailing since I was little. And swimming. We have the best beaches here in what's called the Third Coast. So those are some of my very favorite summer activities.
And how did you get into sailing originally?
My grandfather took me. I was 4 or 5, and he took me sailing on Lake Michigan. And I've just been sailing ever since. And now, as program manager, I get to teach sailing, which is, you know, kind of a fun summer job to have.
Now, Jason, turning to you, you are part of the DNR. You cover a big swath of the state. Do you have any suggestions for places to visit in the state to enjoy, you know, being on the water this summer?
Sure. Well, I mean, as you already mentioned in the intro, you know, Wisconsin just has a ton of water, 15,000 lakes. I know our state to the west likes to claim their 10,000, but we have more, and we have a lot of water. Every county just about in the state has a great quality water body for you to get out of, all different skill levels, all different styles, whether it's Great Lakes, whether it's inland bodies of water, or it's our river systems. It's just really key that you kind of tune your what you choose to do with your skill set. That's really the most important component in staying safe.
And where can people find more information about, you know, all that the state has to offer?
Sure. We've got a pretty robust website with the Wisconsin DNR's website that has a whole bunch of information, everything from safety courses and classes that you need to maybe legally take, in addition to other classes that you can take if you just have an interest in particular areas. There's also a lot of partners that we have with the Wisconsin DNR, including the American Canoe Association, which has a multitude of different courses and skill level classes that you can take that are really enjoyable, and you also learn a whole lot.
Now, turning back to Teresa for a second, you are part of the Beach Ambassador Program, and that educates beachgoers about how to stay safe while they are enjoying the beaches that Wisconsin has to offer. Can you tell us a little bit more about this Ambassador's Program?
Certainly. between the Sailing Center, Wisconsin Sea Grant, Milwaukee Water Commons, the Milwaukee Riverkeeper, and a couple of other consortium members. We thought, you know, with no lifeguards on the beach, or even with lifeguards on the beach, people would love to self-educate, to be educated about how to stay safe. And so the Beach Ambassadors Program, it's a pilot, so it's only at Bradford and McKinley this year, are just there to help people figure out where to find information about how to stay safe while enjoying the beaches here, and to really educate themselves, their family, and then maybe go home and educate their community so that people can feel welcome and safe on the beach.
And what are some of the things that people should be on the lookout for as part of the Beach Ambassador Program? How do you signal to beachgoers, say, you know, water quality, that kind of thing?
Well, the beach itself has a great, the county parks has a great system with their system of flags with red, yellow, and green, indicating the different kinds of water quality or beach conditions. Mostly the flags indicate, you know, please check conditions at the MilwaukeeCountyBeaches.org website has a lot of that information that we just share with other people, like air quality, swim hazard risks, forecasts. And then we also point them to the National Weather Service beach hazard statements that they make for local beaches. So that also tells you what if there's waves to be looking out for or currents or conditions that people should be really aware of.
Teresa Coronado is a program manager at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. She also leads the Beach Ambassador Program. We just heard a little bit about that. And Jason Roberts is the recreation warden with the Wisconsin DNR. He serves 9 counties in the southeastern part of the state. Now, Jason, the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project says there have been more than 980 Great Lakes drownings since 2010, and there were 108 last year alone. Why, if you know, have these drowning incidents become more common?
Well, I think, I mean, as everything or every topic seems to stem back to the pandemic, I think a lot of these, the last couple of years, for example, people have been, you know, recreating locally, which often, and we've had some warmer weather, has driven them to the beach areas. And I think Teresa can probably speak a little bit more to this, but you know, often we get out and we look at Lake Michigan like we look at an inland body of water, and that's not the appropriate way to look at it. It's a very dangerous body of water that has a whole host of different considerations when you're out there, especially for our swimming population along with our beach areas. The Great Lakes alone, you know, they have a very strong structural current that has to be considered, along as well as like longshore currents that I think a lot of our public may not be aware of, and the danger of riptides are just as present here as they are in the oceans. So I think maybe there's just a gap in knowledge of our public as far as how dangerous these Great Lakes can be. And it's just a separate skill set that really you have to be aware of.
We are talking about water fun and safety with Jason Roberts of the Wisconsin DNR and Teresa Coronado of the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We will continue this conversation in just a moment. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. We're talking about fun and safety on the water this summer. Now, do you own a boat? How often do you take it out on the water? How much time do you spend on the water? And if you swim, how did you learn how to swim? And how do you stay safe? Call 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Our guests are Jason Roberts, recreation warden with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Teresa Coronado, program manager at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. She's also involved with the Beach Ambassador Program. Now, Teresa, before we went to the break, you know, Jason was talking a little bit about Lake Michigan and the currents and how to learn about the currents on that lake, which they can be quite dangerous. What advice do you have for people to kind of learn how to read the lake?
It's always a good idea to take a look at what the local services are saying about the beach conditions. For today, there's a weather forecast that shows that there is going to be some hazardous current off the coast of Milwaukee's part of Lake Michigan anyway. And knowing that they are there means that when you get to the lake, you can look for smooth spaces or places that look like they have currents. But currents can happen anytime, especially near piers and jetties. And if there's a strong wind coming from one direction or the other. So it's, you know, both be informed before you go, and then when you get there, take a look and see what does the water look like. And then, of course, we do tell, as beach ambassadors, we do tell beachgoers if they are caught in a strong current to flip, float, and follow. So flip over, float on your back, and let the current take you for a bit because you will follow the coast. And then you can swim in. So a lot of drowning happens because people fight the current and they get exhausted. And it's better just to let the current move you along the coast, and then you can swim in when it's safe.
And how do you help people kind of internalize that flip, float, and follow guidance? Because our natural inclination is to panic. So how does that help people maybe tamp down that panic?
It's, I think, the same as when we teach younger children to stop, drop, and roll when it comes to fires, that if we just keep repeating the message, flip, float, follow, it's something that you just know to do, which means that as you're doing it, you know, you're probably going to panic a little bit, but a lot less because you have a plan, you have something you can do. And that should hopefully relieve some of that anxiety if you do get caught in a rip current.
Now, Jason, at some of these parks, there might not always be help. What should you do if someone or if you falls overboard, maybe on a boat without a life jacket or a flotation device?
Gosh, I have to get right back in line with what Teresa mentioned. I mean, you know, the idea of having some competency in the swimming arena goes a long way. I'm a big advocate. If you have children, get them swimming at a young age, get them confident and more comfortable around water. But just realizing that if you fall in the water, being able to turn on your back and slowing down your breathing, which is often harder to do than what you think, but having a plan and understanding what to do is gets you a long way in, you know, successfully surviving. You know, like I said, slowing down your breathing, but also taking a full breath. We will float. That is the key. Trust your body and trust the physics. We will float. But often people get panicky. They tend to get vertical in the water. And once you get vertical in the water, you tend to sink. So you got to kind of lay out, get on your back, and use your arms, use your legs. And remember to vocalize, make yourself known. Don't try to do it on your own. Make sure you call out and ask for assistance.
Jason Roberts is the recreation warden with the Wisconsin DNR. He serves 9 counties in the southeastern part of the state. And Teresa Coronado is a program manager at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. One of the things that we were just talking about is getting up to a comfortable level. Teresa, going to the beach, of course, can be fun, but the water might make some people nervous for various reasons. How do you work on becoming more comfortable with the water?
I guess I'll start off by saying that having some sort of nervousness is always good. You want to have a healthy fear of the Great Lakes or any body of water. But you are right. We would like people to be comfortable enough to use them and swim, get cooled off. As the pools open, there are a lot of resources for getting swim lessons. I know that the county parks and the Milwaukee Public School system, as well as a bunch of other school systems, especially in Wisconsin along the lake, are doing their best to offer low-cost or no-cost swim lessons. And that's really one way of feeling more comfortable around water. And the other, again, is educating yourself and knowing what the conditions are before you go down, so you know exactly what it is you should be, you know, a little bit more aware of. Is the water going to be cold? Will there be a lot of waves? Is there predicted currents? And what is the water quality like? And knowing those things, I think, should give a sense of security so that you can enjoy yourself at the beach and not just be afraid of the water.
Now, Jason, we have been talking about swimming safety, trying to abate or trying to not drown with these tips that we've just heard. But there are also accidents on the water all the time in terms of people who are boating. What boating safety tips does the DNR have for people who are heading out onto the water?
Well, if you look at the last couple of years, as far as the number of people that have drowned or, you know, had an incident out on the lake, we're looking at 22 fatal incidents in 2020, and we're already at 16 here in 2021. And by far, the tip that I encourage and stress more than anything else is to have that life jacket. And I know it's very common sense, but if you look at who died last year, who died this year, of the 22 people that died last year, for example, only 3 of them were wearing life jackets. So often when people think of boating safety, they think of 2 boats colliding or crashing, which does occur on occasion. But by and far, the people that die out in the water tend to be people that, you know, jump off a boat and they know they can swim in a pool. They know they can swim in front of a pier. But swimming out in the open water is very different when you're dealing with other boat wakes and wash. You're dealing with very deep water often. You're dealing with, once again, like wind and other boats, waves and wakes, which if anybody's ever gotten a little bit of water down the wrong pipe, there's a bit of panic that takes over and things can go sideways really quick. So I just want to stress, wear a life jacket. I've been on this job for almost 20 years now, and I can't say I've ever recovered a person from the bottom of a lake that when I'd speak to the family, they never say he couldn't swim or she couldn't swim. They always said she or he was a great swimmer. So the bottom line is people that drown tend to be people that overestimate their swimming skill set and get in trouble. Wear a life jacket when you're swimming off of a boat.
It sounds like maintaining just a little bit of that healthy fear that Teresa talked about could lead to some really maybe some smart habits by wearing a life jacket, not overestimating your skill level and more. So, Teresa, I want to kind of bring it back to you. What programs are available to get people, you know, swim lessons in Milwaukee, maybe for younger people to get them more acclimated? While maintaining that healthy fear of the water, but to the water, so they can have fun but still stay safe.
The local pools that are open in the county parks all offer swim lessons. The YMCA has now reopened their lessons, and the Milwaukee Public Schools has a water recreation department that is doing, you know, their best during the pandemic, but usually does have really great easy access to pools for anybody that goes to an MPS school, which I think provides access to a lot of places that might not otherwise have access to water before coming down to Lake Michigan.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for joining us. And Jason, thank you for joining us. Teresa Coronado is a program manager at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. She also works with the Beach Ambassador Program. And Jason Roberts is the recreation warden for the Wisconsin DNR. They joined us to talk about how to have fun but stay safe on Wisconsin's lakes. Just ahead, we'll talk about loons on the morning show. This is the Ideas Network.